622 in 2016 to 2017 to more than 18,000 in 2019 to 2020. It seems unlikely that Priti Patel will bow to pressure from campaigners after already dismissing the criticisms levied against the plans, much like she dismissed the sentiments behind the Black Lives Matter protests that swept throughout the UK. Ahmed Cabello, London.
Two times Prime Minister Najib Mikati has been given the task of forming a Lebanese cabinet for the third time. After officially being appointed by President Michel Aoun, Mikati stressed that he needs the confidence of the people, not only the lawmakers.
To stop the inferno, we all need to cooperate together. I know this is a difficult task, but I have my mind set. If I didn't have necessary foreign reassurances, I would have not taken this step.
While stressing openness to all factions, Mikati also noted that the new government will be formed, quote, according to the French initiative, for the interest of Lebanon and its economy. 72 members of parliament endorsed Mikati, including Hezbollah's loyalty to the resistance bloc.
Since the resignation of Hassan Diop's government in August 2020, the loyalty to resistance bloc has called for the formation of a government in order to facilitate the country's affairs. We have always dealt very positively with all the efforts, and with the emergence of signs pointing to the possible formation of a government, we have voted for Najib Mikati.
Experts believe the rhetoric with which Mikati has begun his task is that of openness, and therefore could pave the way for more flexible talks with all sides.
Prime Minister Mikati has clearly said he has foreign guarantees, and he also said there are no preconditions from any of the partners in the country. So this is a new method of dealing with things in Lebanon, would entail that all sides deal positively with this formation, since they all want a way out of the crisis in light of a looming security calamity if the crisis persists.
Mikati, who seems to have the support of the United States and France, has claimed he can stop the economic and financial collapse, which has worsened since October 2019. The designation of Najib Mikati as prime minister was calm and prompt. However, what lies ahead will be much more tumultuous, whether it is the formation process or facing the multifaceted crisis in Lebanon. Mariam Saleh from the Presidential Palace in Baabda.
People have been displaced from their homes after Taliban captured the Shia-dominated district of Mahlistan in central Ghazni province. They say the Taliban committed war crimes by killing tens of civilians.
We were in the region during the first two nights of the Taliban attack, but were forced to leave our homes. The Taliban forced us to provide them with food and drink. They also killed about 40 innocent civilians.
The recent Taliban advances across Afghanistan have brought heavy consequences for local Afghans, especially those who live in remote districts and villages. The Mahlistan in west of Ghazni province is one among attacked regions by the Taliban over the past weeks.
We call on the government to retake our district and secure the roads connecting Mahlistan to the provincial capital city of Ghazni. We, the people of Mahlistan, are the part of Afghan nation, and the government is responsible to provide us the security.
Taliban has dismissed any reports on killing of civilians in the Mahlistan region. Fighting between the Taliban and Afghan government forces has increased over the past months as foreign troops leave the country. The Taliban has made rapid gains, retaking border crossings and rural areas. The government has stepped up operations to push back the militants. Figures show that at least 3,000 people have been displaced from Mahlistan district over the last 10 days following Taliban attacks there. Displaced residents say government forces did not resist those attacks as they had expected. This, as Afghan officials have repeatedly claimed that troops were tactically retreated from dozens of districts, including Mahlistan. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Israeli warplanes carried out airstrikes early Monday on positions in the Gaza Strip in response to incendiary balloons fired from Gaza. Palestinians say these balloons are a means to pressure the Israeli regime to respond to their demands and lift the siege imposed for 15 years deteriorating the life of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
Israeli airstrikes are part of efforts by Israel to undermine the Palestinian resilience and increase the suffering of Palestinians. These airstrikes show the weak position of the Israeli army. The Israeli regime is linking the reconstruction in Gaza to political issues, including the fate of its soldiers in Gaza, and we won't accept this. The ongoing blockade and restrictions will lead to serious consequences, and the resistance won't remain silent.
Among the demands, Palestinians call for the import of building materials required for the reconstruction of Gaza and the Qatari grant. Israel refuses all the Palestinian demands and links the reconstruction process in Gaza to political issues.
The Israeli regime has stopped the import of the required construction materials needed for factories that were damaged during the latest escalation. This has led to paralyzing the economy of Gaza. The Israeli regime thinks these attempts will break their willingness, but Palestinians will always support the resistance as the only means to defend their rights.
According to the Israeli army statement, the airstrike over Gaza won't stop as long as Palestinians keep firing incendiary balloons. Palestinian resistance expressed it's ready for all scenarios, including renewed fighting in the face of the Israeli inhuman acts.
The Israeli airstrikes reveal the true nature of the tension between Israeli regime and the Palestinian factions. There are many issues that need to be resolved, including reconstruction of Gaza. If Israeli regime keeps ignoring the Palestinian demands, we won't sit idle.
Palestinians here say the Israeli airstrike is an attempt to put pressure on resisting groups to give up on their demands. Palestinians also stress they will keep firing incendiary balloons until Israel lifts its crippling blockade and end restrictions imposed on the reconstruction of the war-ravaged Gaza. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
10 months ago, Israeli forces arrested Palestinian football player Jevara Namoura and held him behind bars without charge or trial under what's known as administrative detention, deemed illegal based on international law. 3 months later, his pregnant wife gave birth to their first child, a daughter named Julia. This month, his administrative detention order was supposed to end. However, the Israeli regime extended his illegal detention. Almost 2 weeks ago, Jevara started an open-ended hunger strike, protesting his illegal detention and hoping to see and cuddle his 7-month-old Julia. At least 14 other Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails are on hunger strike in protest of their unfair administrative detention without charge or trial. The Prisoners' Affairs Commission revealed that Israeli prison authorities maltreated the hunger-striking detainees and had moved them to solitary confinement to force them in their protest. Israel uses the so-called administrative detention policy to arrest and hold Palestinians without filing formal charges. Tel Aviv insists that they were arrested on secret reports which are inaccessible to prisoners and their lawyers. Human rights groups say Israel should either prosecute those prisoners or release them, especially that the detention orders can be renewed indefinitely, and the detainees could even stay in prison up to 10 years. Israel holds some 5,000 Palestinians in its jails, including hundreds who are held behind bars without any charge or trial. For the Palestinian prisoners, the hunger strike is an attempt to expose Israel's illegal policy of administrative detention that must come to an end. Israel, however, continues to be intransigent in dealing with the hunger strikers' legal demands to make sure that no more prisoners would follow the same path in the future. Mona Kandil, West of Occupied, Ramallah.
زیارت قدیر. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Salam alaikum.
Here is the fourth and last part of the memorable ziyarat of Qadir, or standard form of salutation to the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, which we have been presenting you for the past 3 days. Please stay tuned. My master, it was through you that the truth prevailed, while the people disregarded it, and you expounded the precepts of Islam after they had become obliterated and effaced. Thus you were a forerunner both in waging jihad for the affirmation of the revelation, and yours is the merit of waging jihad for the sake of realizing its meanings. Your enemies are the enemy of Allah, deniers of the Prophet of Allah, who summon to untruth, judge unjustly, usurp power, and invite their confederates to hellfire. And there was Ammar, who, as he fought, cried out between the ranks of the confronting armies, "Come on, let's set out for paradise." When he asked for water, he was given milk to drink, whereat he glorified God and said, "He, the Prophet of Allah, may Allah bless him and his family, had told me, 'Your last drink in the world will be that of curdled milk, and you will be slain by the rebellious party.'" Thereupon, Abul Adiya al-Fazari encountered him and slew him, and may Allah's curse and that of his angels and all his prophets be upon Abul Adiya, and on those who drew their swords against you, and on those against whom you, O Commander of the Faithful, drew your sword from among the polytheists and the hypocrites until the day of retribution, as well as on those who view with approval what offended you and did not decry it, turning away their eyes without disapproving, or provided their support against you through deed or word, or denied you their help, or deserted their duty of waging jihad alongside you, or those who belittled your merits, contested your right, or regarded as your equals such persons over whom Allah had given you a greater right than they had over themselves. May Allah's blessings, His mercy, His bounties, and His greetings and salutations be upon you and the immaculate imams of your descent. Indeed, He is the all-praiseworthy and all-glorious. But what is more amazing and more atrocious after the denial of your right is the wrongful dispossession of the orchard of Fadak from Zahra, the truthful and the pure one, the noblest of the world's women, and rejection of your testimony and that of your illustrious sons and the progeny of the Mustafa, may Allah's blessings be upon you, while Allah the Most High had elevated your rank over the entire Ummah and exalted your station, and He had made manifest your excellence and honored you above all the world's denizens, keeping away all impurity from you and purifying you with utmost purification. Allah the Almighty and Glorious has said, "Indeed, man has been created covetous. He is anxious when an ill befalls him, and grudging when good comes his way. All are such except the prayerful." Thus Allah the Most High made His Prophet an exception to that, as well as you, O Chief of the Legatees, and excluded all other people. So how misguided were those who wronged you with respect to your right, and then, for the sake of deception, assigned you the share of the kinsmen while denying it to its rightful claimants. So when temporal authority came into your hands you let the situation remain as it was before in regard to your rights and those of the Prophet's family, disregarding them for the sake of your reward with Allah. So your ordeal with respect to these two things was like the ordeal of the Prophets, may peace be upon them, in their loneliness and absence of helpers. Your conduct in sleeping on the Prophet's bed was like that of Ishmael, peace upon him, when you assented and obeyed, as he did, patiently and seeking God's pleasure, when Abraham said to him, "My son, I see in a dream that I am sacrificing you. See what you think." He said, "Father, do whatever you have been commanded. If Allah wishes, you will find me to be patient." And so were you when the Prophet, may Allah bless him and his family, bade you to sleep in his bed, and in this manner you shielded him from harm by risking your own life. You were quick to comply, having obediently prepared yourself mentally to be killed, whereupon Allah, the Most High, appreciated your obedience and expressed the gracefulness of your action in his words, "May his name be glorified." And among the people is he who sells his soul seeking the pleasure of Allah. Yet again, your ordeal during the Battle of Siffin, when the scriptures were raised on spears as a deceptive stratagem, whereupon doubts arose in the minds and the truth was set aside and conjecture was followed, similar to the ordeal of Aaron when he was appointed by Moses to lead his people, whereupon they forsook him while he kept calling them, saying, "O my people, you are only being tested by it. Indeed, your Lord is the All-Beneficent. So follow me and obey my command." They had said, "We will keep on clinging to it until Moses returns to us." Such was your case when the scriptures were raised on spear points and you were saying, "O my people, you are being misled and deceived by this means." But they disobeyed you and demanded the appointment of arbiters, whereat you declined their demand and deploring their conduct before Allah, and let them alone. So when the truth was revealed and their wrong stand was discredited, and they admitted their mistake and oversight of the goal. But then they fell into disagreement and blamed on you the folly of arbitration, which you had opposed and they had desired and which you had warned them against, while they considered it legitimate, and held you responsible for the sin that they had committed, although you were on the path of insight and guidance and they were in error and blindness. Yet they persisted in their hypocrisy and perversity until Allah made them taste the evil consequences of their conduct. Those who opposed you became wretched and perished, and God slew them with your sword. He revived through your proofs those who were felicitous and they were rightly guided. May Allah's blessings be upon you at every beginning and end of your days and during all your movements and pauses. No eulogizer can encompass your merits and no detractor can obscure your excellences. You are the best of the creatures with regard to worship, the most dedicated in piety, and the most zealous in defending the faith. With your efforts you maintain the laws of Allah and with your sword subdued the armies of the renegades. With your hands you extinguish the flames of war, and with your discourses removed the veils of doubt, separated the adulterating falsehoods from the pure truth without being deterred by the blame of any blamer in any matter pertaining to Allah. the commendations of Allah the Most High suffices you to do without the praise of any admirer and compliments of any praiser. And Allah the Most High has said, among the faithful are men who fulfill what they have pledged to Allah. Of them are some who have fulfilled their pledge, and of them are some who still wait, and they have not changed in the least. Having seen that you had to fight the perfidious, the perverse, and the renegades, and that the prophecy of the Prophet of Allah, may Allah bless him and his household, had come true in what he had told you, and being content that you had fulfilled your pledge to him, you would say, is it not the time yet for this beard of mine to be dyed in the blood of this head of mine? Or when will the most wretched man from among these people rise up? You were convinced that you possessed manifest proof from your Lord and full insight of your own affair, and that you will meet Allah rejoicing in the bargain you had made with him, and that is the great success. O Allah, let your anathema, accompanied with all your curses, be on those who slew your prophets and the legatees of your prophets, and make them enter the flames of your fire. Let your curse be on those who usurp the rights of your wali, refused to acknowledge his covenant, and opposed him after acknowledging and being certain of his authority on the day when you perfected the religion for them. O Allah, let your curse be on those who killed the commander of the faithful, and those who wronged him, and their followers and supporters. O Allah, bring down your terrible curse on those who wronged Hussein, and those who slew him, as well as those who followed and helped his enemies, those who approved of his murder, and those who forsook him. O Allah, let your curse be on the one first to wrong the family of Muhammad, blessings of God upon his progeny, those who denied them their rights. O Allah, single out for your curse until the day of resurrection the first one who wronged the family of Muhammad and usurped their rights, as well as those who followed his policies. O Allah, bless Muhammad, seal of the prophets, and Ali, chief of the legatees, and his immaculate progeny, and appoint me to be amongst their adherents, among those who obtain victory and security through their wilaya, and who will have no fear, nor will they ever grieve. Dear listeners, what you heard was the fourth and last part of our special program of the past 4 days, and a special ziyarah of the blessed day of Qadir for the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Iran Today.
While Iran's between presidents, there's room to review outgoing Rouhani's report card and envisage where Raisi will pick up as he takes over on August the 3rd. Economic woes and wills are our focus of the day in light of foreign policy. Iran's economy was at the edge of a cliff when moderate Hassan Rouhani took office in 2013. To pull it to safety, he took a big step towards a grand plan in signing the JCPOA or Iran nuclear deal of 2015. The plan didn't materialize and Iran is where it is. But was a deal with powers west and east our only respite as a country aspiring to independence? The nuclear deal with six world powers was to limit Iran's nuclear program in return for sanctions relief. But the U.S. pulled out in 2018 and reimposed and reinforced sanctions. It was a deal with the devil. Still, the country wouldn't have needed that cure with a little more self-reliance and reliability in the system. Mr. Qadiri Abiyane is an ex-diplomat and analyst who made the trek to the studio to give us his take on affairs.
What would you say has been the government's greatest mistake and how connected to foreign policy is it?
Rouhani's administration gave people hope that the JCPOA would solve the problems and lift the sanctions. The false hope held some people off from doing projects like launching factories or building houses until the JCPOA is signed. This hope led to a stagnation in economic activities and in turn caused an economic recession. Rouhani's administration negotiated the deal. However, he gave more concession than will be obtained. The administration didn't seek any guarantee for its implementation. Therefore, not only the sanctions remained in place, but they also were intensified. This vain hope in the U.S. hurt our economy.
Rouhani basically blames Trump's sanctions and COVID-19 for the current situation. But how correct is he? Our guest tells. Mr. Sheikhi is an economist with pretty strong feelings against the current administration's performance.
You see, the coronavirus circulates around crowded spaces. Its infection has a direct relationship with how crowded places are, and as a result, it majorly affects the jobs that deal with crowded spaces, which is the service occupations. As a result, the effect of coronavirus has been mild on the production section. The 12th administration cannot hide its lack of attention to the production section behind the outbreak of coronavirus.
Mr. Davoudi is the IRNA agency's chief of news. He came to Press TV studios to share his journalist's fair view of the situation.
Mr. Rouhani's administrations have made achievements in the past 8 years, which I think are all valuable, both in terms of economics and politics. One is that after 2015, having a nuclear program was recognized as a right for Iran by other nations, which wasn't the case before. I think this is their biggest possible achievement, although they could make more progress too. But out of bad luck, a president took office in the US who eliminated all the achievements. Trump ruined all Rouhani's plans for the country's growth.
When the nuclear deal came into force in 2016, sanctions were lifted. But the economy didn't exactly pick up, as the deal didn't bring in Iran's expected foreign investment, which would have helped privatization and hence the greatly centralized economy. And then, with the US unilateral pullout, sanctions came gushing in, bringing with them a whole lot of new rubble along the way. Principalists have been mocking Rouhani's hope campaign, his attempts to revive the JCPOA via Vienna talks that started over 3 months ago. His response? He simply suggested that they be put on the spot about whether they want sanctions relief.
To what extent would you say hiccups in Iran's economy are down to foreign policy and foreign trade?
The situation we're in is a project of not only our foreign policy, but a multitude of different issues. Speaking of foreign policy, I definitely believe that the world is like a village, and we can't barricade ourselves off of the rest of the world. We can't achieve any dynamic economy without interacting with the world and our neighbors. We need to expand our foreign relations. But on the other hand, issues such as mismanagement has had serious effects on the country's conditions. We need to focus our attention on issues that could generate added value for us and disregard others that don't.
When you have managers who are in favor of westernization, of course they'll be after expanding discrimination too, because it's one of the principles of a capitalist economic system. Giving out economic rent and causing injustice are the other characteristics of a capitalist economy. The aim of an Islamic economy is promoting justice. But the capitalists seek growth by any means, no matter if a majority of people is being crushed under pressure while a few prosper. Unfortunately, Rouhani's administration tied the economy to the West. He wanted to implement a Western capitalist economy, and that's why we failed. They tied the economy to the JCPOA and the FATF.
It was on the 8th of May 2018 that the US pulled out, with sanctions ensuing in a month, which set out to target Iranian purchases of US dollars, metal trading, coal, industrial software, and Iran's auto sector, though the toughest measures targeting oil exports were not to take effect for another 4 months. U.S. companies don't do much business with Iran, but Washington has the ability to block European and Asian firms from trading here.
Well, both sanctions and the COVID pandemic affected the economy, but we suffered the most damage from Rouhani's administration's lack of insight, which stemmed from trusting the US and Europe. After the US withdrew from the JCPOA, the administration continued its compliance with the deal, arguing that everyone else is still a party to it. This is why the Europeans have $1,400 billion worth of economic ties with the US, compared to $20 billion with Iran. Obviously, they wouldn't abandon the $1,400 billion for our $20 billion.
The Iranian economy has been adapted to sanctions of different strength since the revolution of 1979, and so it is industrially moderately independent. But still, it is beset by high unemployment, a real currency that took a deep dip towards the end of President Ahmadinejad's term and has now taken a plunge, and it has oil exports that have gone down from under 2.5 million barrels per day to unknown lows. Now it's become better, of course. But still, this forced the country to print money without backup, and it sent the country into high inflation. Principalists were genuinely vindicated when the U.S. binned the deal after Iran's compliance in paralyzing its nuclear program and rendering the country vulnerable to outsiders coming in as nuclear observers. But they also realized the importance of reviving the economy and that sanctions relief would be a quick step in that direction. It will be Rouhani's tragedy if they get to revive the deal he made.
He has just days left in office.
If I want to mention some achievements of Mr. Rouhani's administration, we need to go back to 2015, a year that tens of billions of dollars of Iran's frozen assets were released, a year when $10 billion of Iran's frozen oil sale revenue were released by Italy, India, and the UK, a year that Eni, Shell, and Total came back to our oil industry. Car manufacturers like Volkswagen, Citroën, Peugeot, Renault, and Mercedes came back to Iran to build their commercial products. The year we placed orders for 230 Airbus, Boeing, and ATR airliners. If we remember that year, we would realize the political and economic managers of Mr. Rouhani had laid the groundwork very well.
Well, the Americans didn't provide any guarantee to lift the sanctions in practice, and stay committed to their promises. Foreign Minister Zarif said the signature of the then U.S. Secretary of State, Mr. Kerry, is a guarantee. While it couldn't have been, the signature of the U.S. President or even the Congress aren't considered a guarantee, because they can simply back out of it. Mr. Trump took office and nullified Mr. Obama's signatures. President Biden also reversed some of Trump's orders. The Congress may pass a bill, but can pass anything else afterwards. A guarantee is valid when things go step by step, but because the administration wanted to show goodwill, it did whatever they wanted in advance. In such circumstances, why would they honor their commitments?
Here's a still more or less current price list of 2020 that may make Rouhani look like the worst president ever. But he didn't inherit a bed of roses and hasn't been readily supported with his foreign policy and trade projects. A US dollar equals about 250,000 rials. A standard gold coin would be 110 million rials. The average price of property is 200 million rials per square meter, and it's 30,000 rials per liter for gasoline. To go slightly back, Iran's economy contracted by more than 6% in both 2018 and 2019, according to IMF. That's the International Monetary Fund. It's not just sanctions. Economic ills have been exacerbated also by the coronavirus pandemic. To put figures into a context of Iran's contemporary history, here's a chart showing the rise and fall of inflation during the 5th to 12th presidencies. From a low of under 15% shortly after the Iraq-Iran war during protectionist Rafsanjani's first term as president, the inflation rose to its highest ever in his second term. That's 49%. That was classed as a reason for a reformist getting the next vote. Khatami was the name, and inflation kept at a low during his two terms, which ended with inflation at under 20%. Next came the controversial principalist Ahmadinejad, whose presidency experienced some turmoil. As you see, inflation made some sharp bounces up and down. His first term averaged at 16.5%, dropped to around 10% towards the end, then spiked to about 35% as his second term was ending in 2013. To bridge the gap between reformist and principalist, moderate Rouhani won the next presidency. Looking at the chart, it's as though the JCPOA president dragged inflation down with all his might to a real low of under 10% in 2016, a year before term end. That's the second time in Iran's post-revolutionary history that inflation has dropped that much. Then, with the nuclear deal having fizzled out, inflation shot up to over 40%, that's 42% actually, towards the end of Rouhani's second term in office. And now it's at 45%. Short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Before our next review of figures, let's do a quick media review to see what other news outlets have to say. Here it is in words. Iran Focus mentions some capacities Iran readily had, economic capacities which it has lost. Destroyed capacities of Iran's economy. In recent decades, Iran's economy has moved away from development. Political tensions and the escalation of sanctions, along with mismanagement and inefficiency of managers in various governments, have exacerbated the issue and prevented the Iranian economy from achieving growth and development, and led to the spread of poverty as much as possible. Today, Iran doesn't have stable exports and imports from neighboring countries and the world, and in trade agreements, it has not defined a reciprocal flow for any of the countries and international unions. Even now, the crushing budget deficit has flattened the Rouhani government, so higher costs mean higher inflation and more severe economic and social crises. Rouhani's term is coming to an end. Now it is up to the new government to try and solve these issues after taking office in a very near future. Taslim talks of how Rouhani will be handing over the job to Raisi for a gentle transition. Administration gives successor realistic prospect of Iran's economy. Rouhani, the outgoing president of Iran, said his administration is offering a general outlook of the country's economy to its successor and will share experiences with the next administration's officials. Speaking at a meeting at the Economic Coordination Headquarters, President Hassan Rouhani said his administration has made arrangements for the transition of power with a national outlook and tries to realistically outline the country's macroeconomic plans for the next administration. Pointing to his cabinet's efforts to give transparent reports about its activities over the past 8 years, Rouhani said the people should be informed of the problems that the administration has dealt with and of the measures it has taken to nullify the sanctions and counter the economic war. The Financial Tribune gets a little more technical. Monthly PMI for overall economy drops by 4.7%. The overall purchasing managers index, known by its Farsi acronym Shahmet, for Iran's overall economy, dropped in the third month of the current Iranian year, May 22 to June 21st, after emerging in the second month from a steep decline of the first fiscal month, starting March the 21st. The overall PMI for Iran's economy settled at 51.27 in the month ending June the 21st, from 53.84 in the month ending May the 21st, indicating a 2.57-point or 4.7% decline. A report by the Statistics and Economic Analysis Center of the Iran Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture, the sponsor and coordinator of the survey, says the reading of the index suggests that the economy is still in expansion mode. However, economic players are concerned about power outages and shortage of raw materials. Indices show economic expansion when compared with the previous month. A PMI reading of under 50 indicates contraction, and a reading of 50 implies no change. So if you've got 51.27, that's an expansion. That would be it for this segment, but do stay with us. Iran being a petropower by nature, whatever its present circumstance, it calls for a quick look at its oil and gas export revenues during the 5th to 11th presidential terms. Looking at the chart, President Rafsanjani saw oil and gas revenues rise from around $25 billion to under $40 billion in his second year in office. That's in 1990. As his second term came to an end, so did energy revenues drop to around $20 billion. With Khatami, they first dropped further, but then peaked to around $30 billion and dropped a little again. As a sign of success, revenues spiked to a high of $55 billion and more to mark the end of Khatami's presidency. Come Ahmadinejad, revenues rose and fell, as with inflation in his era.
It rose to 90 billion, then fell to around 70 billion as his first term ended in 2009. His second term saw revenue spike to around $110 billion, then crash down to around $55 billion as he left his office behind. The lowering trend went on to about $30 billion in 2015 when Rouhani was in office. After the JCPOA of 2015 and 16, things picked up. Then again, they deflated with the U.S. pullout and renewed sanctions during Rouhani's second term in office. Economic growth here depends mainly on oil revenues, which explains why the growth rate has been negative in recent years since sanctions renewal. Traditionally, oil revenues make up for more than 50% of Iran's budget. Here's how the Statistical Center of Iran sees economic growth panning over presidencies. The fifth government, that's Hashemi Rafsanjani's first term in office, saw a rise in economic growth to under 15% in 1989. But then it went downhill to rise moderately in 1996 and dropped to zero by the end of his second term. Kav Khatami, with every fall came a rise. His highest point was about 7.5% growth in 2002. Ahmadinejad followed, starting with a gentle growth, which at its highest in 8 years hit around 7%, and after some bouncing, plunged to the lowest level in all 8 presidencies to about minus 5 at a point. With Rouhani, growth was significant. It picked up and up to about 7% and took one plunge only in his unfortunate second term to about minus 2%.
Of course, there are criticisms against the administration's performance. I think insufficient work was done in the housing sector. That's why we're dealing with a very bad situation there. But speaking of the current administration's non-JCPOA-related achievements, I need to point out the decision to make pensions equal. That really helped the pensioners, and I hope the draft bill is enacted so that the change would be made permanent. The other achievement was in managing financial and credit institutions. If you can remember, we had problems with them a few years ago. But you haven't been hearing of a financial institution embezzling or stealing people's money for a few years now.
As for the new Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, he centralized his campaign on fixing the economy, as a matter of fact. But he bluntly said no to the notion of getting into direct talks with his American counterpart in the early days post-election. He did give a nod to pursuing ongoing talks, however. It is to be seen if his style will work any better than other principalists who have dominated the system since parliamentary elections in February 2020. Principalists behind him appear to have recognized the potential contribution of sanctions relief to his public standing, if not to the economy. Earlier, with Rouhani at full throttle, the new parliament wasted no time in passing a bill demanding strict sanction relief deadlines for the U.S. so that Iran would itself recommit to the deal. President Rouhani was furious, saying of his top nuclear negotiator Abbas Araghchi at the Vienna talks, he could finalize the deal as soon as today, referring to Parliament's postponement late last year. To the U.S., MPs' demands were impossible to meet. Although the MPs themselves largely felt justified for said reasons and because they were incensed at what they called Rouhani's putting all his eggs into one basket rather than depending also on China and regional countries for trade.
Honestly, the JCPOA was a big deal. But speaking of the weaknesses of Rouhani's achievements in the past 8 years, I think we should admit that some issues could have been managed better. But to that end, the executive branch was left alone while other branches of the administration should have helped it. After the Saudi Arabian embassy was stormed, we should have reacted better and tried to normalize our relations with Arab states in the Persian Gulf. We also should have done more with relations to our ties with China and Russia.
We said economic woes don't depend wholly on foreign policy. Domestic mismanagement and corruption are no less to blame. But the government is not alone in deserving blame there either. It is but one branch of more than three in this country. Regarding the government's own share of blame, here's one example.
Corruption was rampant in Mr. Rouhani's administration, from his brother to the brother of his first vice president, who are now in jail. But one of Mr. Raisi's very positive characteristics is that he's a very healthy individual and will try to choose managers who are honest. He responds very harshly to any corruption. Mr. Rouhani would increase the salaries amid the economic problems, including that of the managers, which were not proportionate to the raise ordinary people would receive.
Indeed, Iran faced problems even between 2015 and 2018 when sanctions were lifted and the administration received billions of dollars in previously frozen assets. Critics blame the administration for wasting resources, but most of the wastage was made without the administration's intervention. As an example, when foreign economic pressures affected the forex market, the Rouhani administration gave dollars at preferential rates up to four times cheaper than market rates to insiders. This was for them to import essential commodities. According to critics, many of the insiders who received the cheap dollars never returned the profits or even the original sums. That's presuming they didn't bring in imports. Mr. Qadiri is against the cheap dollars to begin with.
There were some wrong policies. For example, the dollar must be sold at a single rate. But the administration sold it at 4,200 tumans, which is one-fifth of its true price. Well, anyone who received the currency at that rate could make a 500% profit off of it. These are the wrong policies that we witnessed during other administrations too. The currency rates need to be real. The administration should determine its price on the stock market and not in meetings so it can change it however it wants every single day.
Rouhani's administration made the least efforts to implement principles of resistance economy, while, as the leader of the Islamic Revolution said, it isn't a new phenomenon. The Westerners, the Americans, Europeans, British and French have been supporting their domestic production for 300 years, which is a main principle of resistance economy. They took that formula but are dictating privatization and abandoning domestic production to us.
That's it for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do join us again at the same times next week and each week after, as you never know what's going to be on. Till then, bye.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be examining a very important question, and that is the question of the necessity of revelation. One of the objections that is often mentioned with respect to the necessity of revelation is this. Some people say that the message that a prophet brings, which comes in the form of revelation, which is given to him through revelation, is either contrary to what reason tells us and which reason arrives at and intellect arrives at, or it's harmonious with it. There are only two options and alternatives here. In the case where it's harmonious with what reason speaks about and revelation tells us about, in this case, there's no need for revelation because we can use our powers of reasoning and our intellects to arrive at the same conclusions without any need for revelation. In the case where it is contrary to what our reasoning and our intellects speak about, in this case, the revelation and the message that the Prophet brings to revelation should be rejected because we can't accept something which is contrary to reasoning. Otherwise, we would be undermining the very reason why we accept revelation in the first place, because we arrive at the necessity of revelation through the powers of reasoning. The answer to this question is this, that it's possible for a certain faculty to arrive at certain conclusions with respect to a certain subject. And for it to be a legitimate means to arrive at, to investigate certain subjects, but and also arrive at certain correct conclusions when it investigates those subjects, but for it to be an incorrect and illegitimate faculty of knowledge with respect to other subjects. So we could legitimately and rightfully deny its value with respect to the investigation of certain subjects without undermining its legitimacy with respect to other ones. Like, for example, there is a faculty within man which has the ability to properly investigate into mathematical problems without any difficulty. When this faculty investigates in these matters, it's a legitimate faculty, and it arrives at correct conclusions. However, when the same faculty investigates ontological or philosophical problems, or matters, spiritual matters, it's possible for this faculty to arrive at incorrect conclusions and for it to be illegitimate. The same thing can be said of, and this is a general law, and it can also be applied to the faculty of reasoning, or before it has blossomed under the auspices and the assistance of revelation. The arguments that we use to arrive at the necessity of revelation, right, through the faculty of reasoning, are very simple and very very common. The common man can understand them, and therefore the faculty of reasoning in its lowest form has the ability to understand this conclusion and to arrive at this conclusion even before it has blossomed under with the assistance of revelation, right? But the things that revelation speaks about, the teachings of revelation, are only things that that reasoning can understand after it has blossomed under the tutelage and the assistance of revelation. So therefore, we can say that this power of reasoning is illegitimate and cannot arrive at these conclusions before it has been assisted with revelation, even though it's a legitimate faculty and has the ability to arrive and to understand the necessity of revelation before it has been assisted in this way. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the necessity of revelation and prophecy. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 1-9395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.